I think that it's pretty valid to say that there's a feeling of control of power beneath you. I myself own a motorcycle, and I quite honestly admit that it is for the feeling of control of power that I have it there. But I think it goes just a little deeper than just wanting to control power. Although this is what the reason is. Now, I understand I'm saying that this is the reason. I believe it, certainly. Coupled with the fact that you all look nice, you know, it's the dream of every red-blooded American boy to have a big, bright red convertible or whatever, and to have the fastest car around, and that's the rise in all the speed equipment that's been going on. And I think that it's a good thing to say that yes, we seek for power. But when I analyzed it in my own mind, I found out this: that with this need for power and this feeling of security that the car gives you, and it gives you a feeling of security, that there is a feeling of belonging, of doing what your fellow people are doing, of satisfying your own inner appetite for this lust for power in a very superficial way. And I want to make it clear to people right here and now that teenagers think and teenagers believe in things that basically are not of a great value. And I don't think that's wrong. I don't think it's wrong. And understand, of course, I'm not saying this is a general rule. I'm saying this is a pretty good rule to follow. I don't think it's wrong for girls to wear their hair in bubble hairdos. And I don't think it's wrong for girls to chase boys. And I don't think it's wrong for girls to wear ridiculous amounts of makeup. Because this is what we believe in. Now, if I was to stand up and say that this we believe in is right, of course, this itself would be wrong. Now, maybe I'm getting everybody twisted up and tangled up here. To restate the fact, I don't think it's wrong to believe in it. I think what we are believing in is wrong, but that's me. And I have figured this out as I've gone. But I think that there is a pretty quick amount of condemnation on people's parts, on a parent and an adult, to say, grow up, put your values on something that really is worth something. And Lord knows we want to do this, but it's a question of crawling before you can walk. And so when a teenager runs out and gets in a big convertible with 4 feet floorship and this and an older tampic cam and six one barrels sitting on a Hawaiian log and a whole bit, and gets this girl in there and runs her across the white formaldehyde rolled upholstery, and the whole thing, and the girl sitting there looking like the Queen of Sheba, and they have this big moment of exaltation. Right, that we have placed our values on something wrong. But we have placed our values. And this is more than we were doing when we were 10. This was more than we were doing when we were 8. And understand that we're growing up. And that for somebody to stand up and say, you're going to change this overnight, and you're going to make us put our values on something that makes a lot of sense, is ridiculous. You can't do it. Now then, I can hear everybody crying right now. Wait a minute. If you put your values on that, this leads to trouble. Well, this is where I think the perspective comes in. I have this word. I say perspective. It may not be a valid word. I mean, it may be something I don't exactly mean to say, but anyway, it's kind of a pet thing. But I mean, a perspective of your own sense of values. You get things into your own life in a degree of importance as they are important to you. And when things get out of perspective, when things get out of their It sure the heck is. I feel like that there are a lot of people who have a car that's the most important thing to them in the world, and who live, eat, breathe, and sleep artistically warped sheets of red aluminum. But I don't think that this is the general rule, and I also don't think that this is a primary cause for anything. The car situation, not our system of values. Now, I think this might be the crux of the matter. But the car situation, I think, should be left alone. I might change the page just a second. Well, I went on a little bit much about the car deal, didn't I? I didn't mean to. I just listened to the tape and I see what I'm saying. Back to the perspective thing. We have our system of values placed upon the things that most people accredit to teenage life nowadays. And it's right. I mean, you're right. That's exactly what we've got our system values placed on. And so what? This is... I'm frustrated. I can't exactly say what I want. Take for instance. Well, let's just go down this thing logically. Now, teenagers today think. And function in a certain way that seems to be inappropriate. And to a great extent, it seems to be causing a lot of trouble. I think one thing I should caution the adult world, and of course that sounds terrible, it sounds like I'm alienating teenagers from adults. But there is a hell of a lot of difference there. The adult thinks... Now, let me back up just completely. A teenager as opposed to an adult's way of thinking, is needless to say, greatly different. And the adult world today thinks that a great amount of trouble, strife, and problems are coming from the plight of the American teenager. And I don't think that in proportion there's any more trouble than there was before. There are several things that we can accredit, I think, the rise of trouble, if there is a rise. And of course, I'm hearing all these statistics pouring through me until it's running out of my ear. But and I believe them. I'm not saying that they're untrue. The kids today drink more. They look for something to do. They are rebelling against society. They are uprooting the things that they have believed in and the things that the adult world has believed in and has set down the standards. And subsequently, this causes a lot of trouble, a lot of strife, a lot of internal friction. This is manifested physically in knife fights, gun fights, kids on the corners, and so on and so forth. This is what I'm gathering from what I've read and what I can see about me of people saying. And I think to an extent that this is valid. But let me tell you the reasons for these things, people. I want to tell you why. In the first place, our society is just one heck of a lot more complex than it ever has been before. And I don't think that anybody in the world would deny me this particular fact. I feel like that our society now functions in a way that is beyond the wildest dreams of people even in 1910, which is what, 50 short years ago. We have automation. We do have cars. We've got... wholesale everything, we can get everything in great quantities. We use things in great quantity. There's more of us. There's more things going on. And more kids today are becoming educated. And with this education comes a social revolution, I think, that is unavoidable. I sound like I'm delivering these absolutes, and I keep interspersing this silly tape with I don't say that this is the truth. I say this is what I think. This is what I think, me, Mike Nesmith, standing here in this stupid little room. And I think that I'm representative of an average viewpoint, because I myself am something of a rebel. With education, besides a degree of social revolution, comes a keener awareness of things around you, a keener awareness that things aren't quite like they were told to you when you were 12. And by the time you get to be 17, with the advanced teachings in high school and college, 17, 18, and 19, I think your formative year, your transitional years, and of course you can, the problem is universal, I'm not saying it, but I just think this is our most important time, down even as young as 16 in the cases of a lot of girls, that kids become aware of things around them. And boy, I'll tell you, it's frightening. It like scared me to death when I woke up one morning and looked in the mirror, and you just feel grown. People tell you all the time, you don't grow up overnight, and I think you do. And I think that just all of a sudden one day, bam, you're right there, and of course you're just not able to cope with it. And this is a seed of the frustration. And I'm sure I'm not telling anybody anything they don't already know. I mean, I can see the psychologist right now nodding their head and saying, yeah, son, we know. But when you get up and you find yourself thrust out in this world, you're lost of what to do. You don't really know which end is up. You don't know what you should do next. And you have your whole thing torn down already. You know, when you're in school, about the time you're a senior, you get this question thrust at you: do you believe in God? By some intellectual too around the school, and you say, yeah, naturally, you know, because you go to church and things. And then this intellectual proceeds to make a nut out of you, proceeds to make an absolute idiot out of you from a logical standpoint, saying, "Oh, there is no God this way, this way, this way, this way," and making an absolute sham of everything that you've ever believed in. But this usually doesn't change your mind, but it does upset you. It does make you wonder and make you think what this guy was talking about. And it makes you wonder what's going on. So, and I use that just as an example. I mean, there are countless, countless, countless other things going on. As you maneuver throughout your own society, which is a young world, you find that coupled with this mass confusion, there is no leadership. There is no leadership for the teenage society. Now, I'll tell you somebody who almost made it, who almost was a father, who almost pulled through, and a person who I have the highest regard for even today, that's Dick Clark, the founder of, I don't know, his founder, whatever he is, of American Bandstand, was a leader. You look for a leader, and you're confused, and there's this mire, and you want to be happy, and so you go out and you drink, and you try and get happy, and you find out that when your mind gets befuddled with booze, you don't care anymore. You know, you're happy. It's great. And of course, it wears off in no time at all. And you go to church and you say, well, what about this guy that told me there was no God? And the preacher gives you the same arguments that you gave this guy, and that this guy that made look so bad. And then you go up and you look in the mirror and you're breaking out. You got pimples all over your face. And you're a muck. You just don't know what to do. And you look around for a leader, and you look around for, well, help me out of this place, you know. And there's nobody around. Now then, I can hear it now. Come right through the roof, you know. Well, what about the parents, and what about this, and what about that? What about our social workers? What about the YMCA? And all these things are schmuck. They are pure schmuck. Because kids nowadays won't associate. And you know, I'm going to base my career on this thing. I'm going to base what I really believe in on this thing. Kids will not associate with anything that is not completely cool, that is not completely suave, that is not totally in, that doesn't swing. If it's not there, it's not there. And I'll tell you that one of the biggest things in the world that doesn't swing are parents. And I'm not going to stand here and I'm not going to say on this tape recorder that I think the parents should make a big revolution and turn around and say, man, we're swingers, we live, we really move, we can keep up, because they can't. Because a parent on a normalizing, stabilizing factor. And you can't look to somebody who's moving like this all the time for guidance, you know. I mean, you can't look to one of your own kind for guidance and your deeper, more spiritual understandings of things. So parents, stay where you are. You know, you guys are doing a wonderful job. Parents have always been perplexed by this thing, and just stay on being perplexed and leave us alone. The only place you can find a leader is in your own group of people. That's the secret of popularity in school. The kids want a leader. They want somebody to do something first. Because they're not sure. Nobody's sure. And when I was in high school, talk about somebody not being sure. That was me. I didn't know which way to go, and I was probably the world's biggest follower. Although I had the potential of being a leader, and I had this command, I still was a follower because I was so lost, because I had no place to go. And subsequently, I went the route of the thing that everybody's talking about. Now, I'm not gonna say, well, I am gonna say that to drink at a party and to carouse around and just raise hell in general is good. Now, I really think it's true. I think it is. I think it's an essential part, because you see, teenagers, while they don't have a leader and a person, like y'all do, like adults do. They don't have a leader and a person like President Kennedy, and they don't have a leader and a person like a boss at a job, and they don't have a leader and a person like a labor manager. Turn to something superficial. Booze, there's one. A girlfriend, there's two. Car, there's three. Clothes, there's four. I can go on and on and on and on of the things that kids look for the comfort and security that they're seeking. Now, everybody's right when they say it's a lack of security. I mean, I know that. I'm not saying at all that kids nowadays are more secure than they ever were. No, I don't think this at all. I think that because of this complex society that I mentioned a little before, and the way things are moving now, that kids are more insecure probably than they ever have been, coupled with the fact that they're being educated faster, quicker, harder, you know. And that's all right, because the kids nowadays can stand up to it. The kids nowadays have got more backbone, have got more fiber, have got more guts than anything than they ever had before. So, let me say, my car will go up. I don't know who it is either. Oh, it's next door. I think that they can become very easily adjusted to this tremendous pace that's been established. And darn it, I lost my train of thought. But just a second, I'm gonna play this back. Okay. I don't see that. relax. Officials, relax. Psychologists, relax. Because everything's going to be okay. All we need to do is to find our way out. And y'all can't help us. You can't help us by screaming to us. You can't help us by what do you call it? Loving us. You can't help us by trying to become part of us and lead us out. Unless, and I'm talking, of course, we're hearing about parents mostly. I should say that. You can't help us lead. You can't lead us out unless you relax. Unless you let go. Unless you just say, okay, now I'm not saying that the panic of control should be forgotten and banned and just shoved down the drain and say, okay, kids, do what you want. No, this is not at all. I mean, that would be insane. I'm just saying that parents are going to have to realize the young people of today are of a great deal of caliber. I want to go in with a little detail. One of the basic reasons why kids do this, after I make this one point, that will more or less summarize what all I've said up to now. I was talking to a girl one time, I'll use it in this experiment, and she said, you know, Mike, I met this guy, and he's great. And this guy really was. He was a cool guy, and probably one of the world's neatest people, you know. And he drove a little 57 green Thunderbird, and he was real good looking. And this girl asked me, she said, and I don't know what. She says, I know I feel something for him. I know I'm this crazy man in love with him, but I don't know whether it's infatuation, or I don't know whether it's really and truly love. Well, she was 17. But I got a glimpse of someone over at her house, and I said it to her. And dearest people, dearest mama and daddy, listen, please, to me, just one thing. I said to Linda, well, I know how you feel, and I'll tell you, yes, you're in love with his car, and yes, you're in love with his look, and yes, you're in love with the way you look when you're around him. But love these things, because that's what you've got right now. That's all you have. You have no basis for a real relationship with him. You're both young. You're both without any actual foundation. So go ahead and love these things, son. Love them, because that's all you've got right now. And work constantly within yourself to found something basic and real. And always keep in mind that yes, you're in love with his car. Yes, you're in love with his reflection. Yes, you're in love with what you're doing. Well, that's all I've said up to now. I'm just saying, this is what we've got. And this is what we know. And I think the only thing that mom and dad have to worry about, and chief police have to worry about, and the psychologists have to worry about, is the fact that we know this, you know. And we'll swear up and down to you, and we'll say, no, we are deep, we're basically sound, we're basically solid, and we know deep down within ourselves that as teenagers, we can only be so deep because we only have so much intelligence. Grant us this one favor. Grant us that one favor. That thing of letting us fight our way out of this muck. Our way out of the moat of misunderstanding and of just plain not knowing. And that seems that was speech. I wanna go on to a little bit of extent about the want to know it. I think I haven't got the sense that God probably gave a dumpy mule, but I do believe that every one of us are of such tremendous moral and mental fiber that we can do it. We can pull ourselves out of this mire. And for crying out loud, Mama, for crying out loud, Papa, leave us alone and let us fight our way up. Leave us alone in this aspect. And don't try and make us feel wanted. Just turn around, and what you can make us feel wanted is to say, and I mean from the bottom of your heart, turn around and say, son, I'll give you every bit of support you need me. You tell me what you need. And don't say, we know what you need. We know you know it. We know you're sure. Let us figure it out, because it's the only way. I mean, it's kind of a tragic situation. Kids just don't want to learn. Now that's one thing. Keep that in mind. Now he says here, he's worried about the street corner commandos and the party crashers and the guys with the long hair and the hoods with the thin pinstripe sweaters and the pencil black. And I'm not going to say that doesn't exist, because I'm sure it does. I don't think that it's the general rule. I say that the way to combat this, just like I said before, this particular aspect. Now, of course, I never was this kind, so I can't really say for sure what exactly the deal is on this thing. But
well, if I hadn't been recording, I'm gonna be furious.
Okay.
Well, I did record some, I guess.
Hello.
Okay.
Scared me to death. Well, it's all that wind. I never was this kind of guy, you know. I mean, I never was the kind of clown who wanted to go and just raise heck. Not because I was a stick in the mud, because I think I was probably as swinging as anybody else around. I just never did want to do this. So I can't really talk comprehensively. I just think it gets back to this same situation again. I know one thing: the kids are bored. And I know that they want something to do. And the only way that I can say that I can see that you can get them on board is to find you a sharp young teenager, find you a sharp young dynamic man, and let him go, let him establish it. And for crying out loud, don't give him any more support than financial and your signature on the thing. Because you'll kill it, you see. You get this man, you get this boy, and set him up and say, okay, son, get this kid from Los Angeles and say, okay, son, we got this problem. Now how are we going to solve it? And you let us know, and we'll do what you want to do. We'll establish what you want to establish. Or maybe a group of them. And don't go getting the people that make good grades. And don't go getting the people that are big science lawyers, because these people are just as mixed up as the other. They just happen to have channeled their creative interests. Don't get these people. Get somebody who is an average student, but who's sharp. One who is aware of a problem. One who knows what's going on. And this will take a great deal of perceptivity on the part of adults, but I don't think it's a question that's back to be handled, quite simply. And in New York, Chicago, St. Louis, and all over, you know, wherever you get this problem, and say, man, what are we going to do? And then listen. Just y'all listen. And if you come up with a dumb idea, turn around and say, man, that's a stupid idea. Because this is what we want. We don't want people babying. We don't want humor. We want to be treated as though we either do or don't know something, don't know anything. And if we don't know anything, tell us. Because, by golly, you watch. The American teenager will bounce back, and he'll bounce back hard and fast, and he'll say, man, I do too, you know. And one way that they bounce back is with a knife, one way they bounce back is with a gun, and this is your own darn fault, because you haven't given him any recoil. Because when you turn to a guy and you say, you're no good, you're a slob, you're a creep, you're a dirty old man, you're a dirty little kid, then you have given this guy a feeling of being unwanted, and he goes out and he makes himself. He grabs him a club, breaks in a window, and steals $1,700 worth of jewelry. So, and for the jollies of it. So don't let this thing happen just because you won't listen. Just listen. Listen a little bit. You listen. Because we'll say, but we're going to have to be convinced of your sincerity. You know, kids are the most discerning people in the world, and I'll guarantee it to you real quick. And they are the most unforgiving. And I feel kind of strange standing up and saying we're making demands, but I feel like that if you want something done, and it looks like everybody's come to a complete halt, if you want something done, then get somebody who will work, and get somebody who will help you out, and listen to the guy. Will you just please listen to the guy? And I guarantee you that you'll accomplish something. And convince us of your sincerity and belief in our cause by your, like I said before, just leaving us alone, by your saying, can we help you in any way you want us to? And even though we don't always know what's right, neither do y'all. Okay? Even though we don't always know what's right, neither do the adults. So let's keep that in mind, I think, throughout this thing. I want to peruse again a little farther in this article. That's what I say to Mr. Grafton's thing. And Mr. Grafton, I don't know. Man, that's a problem. And I grant it. And I don't know what kind of thinking that it is that would turn a guy into a hood. But I think that it might stem from this particular problem I'm talking about. He goes on about drinking. Boy, this is a sticky problem. And you know, I really can understand, and I know how you parents and how you officials must feel about the teenage drinking problem. Well, for one thing, I'd like to see an 18-year-old drinking with it. I think that in order to, if you're old enough to fight your own vote, this is, of course, I suppose, a completely different issue. I think it might help a little. I don't know. It maybe doesn't help in New York at all. In that same breath, I'll say that I can certainly understand your point, because I can see where that you may think that when you're 18, you're too young to handle booze, and I think this may be true. I really seriously do. I feel like that there's it might be entirely too young. But drinking is one of the few ways that a teenager is able to feel as though he's functioning smoothly in his own society. I keep using that word, functioning smoothly. I can think of no better word. You know, like I say, they sure do want to be accepted, and they sure do feel like they're not, even when they are. And you know how booze relaxes you. You go out and you get some hooch, and you go tooling off into some corner, and you drink, and you can let your hair down and have a good time with each other. And all of a sudden, you forget about yourself. And at this time, people were the most self-conscious kids in the world. At this age, 17, 18, 19, the most self-conscious people in the world. And there's not a thing we can do about it, in a lot of ways. I mean, I'm not saying that it's a hopeless situation at all. No, not at all. I'm just saying that there's, in a lot of ways, it's just that way. And accept that problem and work with it to correct it, you know. And I think it'd be idealistic to say that you'll create a degree of self-confidence in all American males, all American females under the age of 20. But I don't think it is idealistic to think that if you realize the problem and work around it, that you'll make some kind of tremendous headway. When you drink, you're comfortable. When you drink, you're at ease and relaxed. I challenged the man that said drinking is obligatory, Mr. Grafton. It's not, sir. It really and seriously isn't. And I mean that. I mean that it's form of recreation that we all just want to take part in. And there is I would rather imagine a small percentage who, and here again, of course, I'm at a loss without statistics, I guess, and I may be kicking my neck way out on a limb, a small percentage who drink just because the other kids do. Now then, I think that this is a balance.